This is Taking Action Today with Michael Alder, episode 12. We got to cover some marketing. All right, everybody. I have had countless people shoot me emails wondering what type of marketing strategies we're using right now to move our properties. So I figured, what better person to bring in my friend Brad Weber, who sold over 180 houses last year by selling the contracts, what type of marketing he did to bring in buyers for these properties. So let's get right into this. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Brad, there's no question you've handled a tremendous amount of investment properties over the years. Can you share with us a little bit of your backstory and how you got started investing in real estate?
Sure. So it's funny. I mean, you know, I never really started out to be an investor. I always started out trying to figure out what would be the best way for me to make a living, support my family, you know, and just make it in the world. Actually, you know, I started back in college. I was an education major, a teaching major, and I knew probably three quarters of the way through that wasn't going to be a way for me to pay the bills. You know, I couldn't, there was no job prospects at that point. And, you know, starting salaries were 25 or 30 grand. So I just figured I got to find something else, even if it's supplemental to that. So I, as coincidence would have it, my girlfriend at the time, her brother, brother-in-law was one of the top agents in Ohio for real estate agent. And he said, you know, why don't you try this? You can do it in the summers if you want to teach, whatever. So I ended up getting into being a realtor, and you know, I did good. I did very good with it. I was one of the top listing agents on our team. You know, I was good at the sales side of stuff, and the teaching background that I had really helped with it. But I didn't love it. You know, I was going to work every day, spinning my wheels, doing the same stuff. It just wasn't in my heart to do to be a realtor. So, you know, I was open to the universe giving me something else. I was listening to a bunch of podcasts, reading a bunch of books, stumbled upon a couple different podcasts that touched on some aspects of real estate investing that I was never exposed to before. Things like wholesaling, you know, assignments of contract, private money lenders, all these things where, you know, you don't need to be the richest person in the world or even a rich person or, you know, even a moderately well-off person to be able to make it in real estate investing. And it just kind of opened my eyes to the whole other side of this industry that existed that I didn't know existed. So after about 7 years of being just a straight realtor, I did my first wholesale deal and history was made.
That's awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about this first wholesale deal you dove into?
Sure. So, like I said, I got lucky. I was listening to a bunch of podcasts, ran into a couple different guys that were teaching wholesaling and explained to me kind of what that was. And they basically said to me, hey, look, you know, if you're really interested in doing this, send us a deal. And, you know, I had always gotten people that wanted to sell their houses in areas that I really couldn't list a home in. You know, there wasn't any room for a commission. It'd be a lot of work, you know, areas that are D class or worse areas, right? So what was interesting was at that time, which this was about two years ago or so, at that time, there ended up being a market for foreign investors, out-of-state investors, guys that wanted high ROI on paper for low cost to get in. And Cleveland had that in abundance in these D-class areas. So, you know, I ended up getting a listing lead that called me and said, hey, you know, can you list this house in this area? And generally, I would have said, no, I'm sorry, you know, I can't do it. It's not worth my marketing cost to do it as a realtor. But the cool thing for me was at that point, I could say yes. And I could say, sure, let me see if maybe I can buy it from you. So I was able to go and take a look at actually two duplexes. This is my very first deal. Two duplexes in a neighborhood that I would say is maybe a C-minus area. I was able to put them both under contract for $9,000 a piece, and I was able to sell them. I sold them actually within 6 days. I had them sold to one of my investors, actually the guy that, you know, had been teaching me this stuff. I sold them to him, I think, for $16 a piece. So I made $14,000 off my first two deals in a week.
Wow, that's an amazing feeling there.
Oh, it made me feel like, you know, I'm leaving the traditional real estate industry in the dust, and here I go.
Right,
I'm moving
freedom
forward.
Time.
Right.
Excellent. Well, let's chunk that down a little bit because, you know, in our marketplace, there's people going to seminars. They're all instant wholesalers. And then they contact guys like you or I and they say, hey, I get this great deal for $40,000. It's a property that, like you said, you would pay $9,000 for. What was this seller actually asking for this deal? And you were able to lock it up for $9,000.
You know, what's funny is she didn't even have an asking price. I mean, she's like, look, I inherited these properties. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know what they're worth. And, you know, me being naive at the time, I was just straight up with her, which, you know, the thing is, whether you're naive or not, I think it happens more naturally, more organically when you're actually stupid, as opposed to, you know, playing stupid. But, you know, I think there's something to the naiveness of it, and then something to just being honest in general about it. But I was honest with her. I said, look, you know, here's where the market is for these things. And I got to be honest with you, if I'm going to do anything with them myself, I've got to be able to have a margin in there, right? And she understood that. She said, yeah, okay. So I said, look, you know, I think they're probably worth maybe $20,000 if you on the retail market, but no one's going to list them for you. I'll take them both off your hands for 18 total, right? 9 apiece. And she said, okay.
And it's excellent. So you get them under contract like that, and then you just sold the paper at that point?
I did, yeah. Both of those were assignment of contract, right?
Okay, great. And obviously everything ran smooth with it.
Sure did, yeah.
Perfect. So you get your first two deals. You're on top of the world. Where do we go from there?
So, man, I'll tell you what. So, you know, the first two deals happened so smoothly and so easily, I thought, this is gravy, right? I could do this all day long. And then, you know, as with anything that you just start and kind of, you know, fall backwards into, I realized that there's a lot of learning that goes into it. And I got to tell you that with as much success as I've had over the last, you know, 2 years or so doing this, I've had just as much, if not more, failure. And I don't mean failure in the sense that, you know, I'm not succeeding in the business, but failure in the sense that, you know, I'm making a lot of mistakes, and that's not a bad thing. I got to say that, you know, a lot of the deals that I've done over the past year and a half, roughly, have been a learning experience, each and every one of them. And even the ones that haven't really worked out. And I've lost some relationships because of some of the stupid errors that I've made. But it is what it is, you know?
No, I hear you. And I'm glad you touched base on that, too, because, you know, everybody's so used to all the rah-rah, everything's exciting, you're going to win and make all this money, but nobody wants to talk about the hiccups that you encountered. Do you have a specific story you could share with us? Or you're like, what the heck did I just get myself into?
I'll tell you what. Okay, so I had, you know, I got hot and heavy in this idea of, okay, there's all these guys that are looking in the Midwest in general, places like Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Indianapolis, you know, those sorts of, you know, Detroit, those sorts of places. And, you know, they all like the same thing. They all want certain ROIs. They all want, you know, certain areas. All of them want rental property. A lot of them will buy more than one at once. And these guys are everywhere, right? And what I was able to do for a lot of them was, hey, okay, fine. I can be feet on the ground for you here. I'll take a look at, you know, I'll go find the properties for you. I'll take a look at them. I'll coordinate getting a contractor in here to give you an idea of how much it's going to take to fix it up. What I didn't realize was that not everybody, number one, is as naive as I was at that point. And also not everybody is as honest as I was at that point. So I ran into a lot of issues where I'd have, you know, a bad rehab bid or actually bad rehab jobs being done to properties for my investors, costing them money. I mean, specifically, here's one example. I found this other duplex over on the east side of Cleveland that, you know, and I didn't know two things about construction cost, right? So I had no idea. You know, I had a guy go in there and he'd say it's a $15,000 fix. Okay, fine. I'd believe you, you know? And I had a guy go in and tell me, you know, the cost for a rehab for a place for one of my investors. That number went to my investor. My sale price basically went to that investor. I got my assignment fee off of it. The deal was done. I made my money. But then, you know, there ended up being all these problems on the back end. The contractor was dishonest with us. The work wasn't as good of a quality as it should have been. There was problems with management, all these issues. So, you know, in light of being, you know, honest and trying to save my relationships, I actually put money back into some of those deals and lost money on some of those deals, even though I'd already assigned them out to my investors. You know, I paid them back for some of their losses. But I can still tell you that even with trying that hard to maintain those relationships, I still have lost some relationships because of those issues. So I'd say the key for me, one of the biggest lessons that I got out of that sort of a thing is to make sure that you, number one, know your numbers, number two, know your contractors, and number three, have character and be willing to put some skin in the game if it matters to you. I mean, and what it should really, because if you're looking at maintaining a relationship with investors that are going to buy from you as a wholesaler, that's number one, that's key.
Yeah, I agree. I had a an interesting deal where we were going to fund a deal for a an investor, and it was brought to us by a wholesaler. And long story short, you know, he guaranteed us clean title. The guy that we were providing the funding for, he gave him a deposit on the property, and it turned out the property came back with a dirty title, and he couldn't get his deposit money back. And, you know, I know the kid, he's still around, but it's like, you know, you just burned a bridge over a $500 deposit. And, you know, if he was ethical about it and just said, you know what, things happen, here's your money back, let's move forward to the next deal, we would still do business with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunately little things like that that'll crush a relationship.
Yeah. It's a shame, man. I mean, but you know, it happens. And like I said, that's the learning curve. You know, I wish, you know, if I could go back and do it over, I wish that I would have spent more time learning what things actually cost in terms of, you know, fixing a property up and trying to align myself with the right people, which I'm doing now. And, you know, it's been a hump to get over. But if I could do it over again, that's one thing that I would change, making sure that I know what I'm looking at when it comes to these properties, because you can get screwed pretty easily by, you know, a lot of different types of people in the business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's tough managing contractors for sure. I know that.
Yeah.
So moving forward, you went on to last year, you flipped over 180 houses. Can you chunk this down into your marketing, your research? I mean, that is just a tremendous amount of properties to handle there.
Sure. yeah. I mean, you know, it sounds like a lot, but, you know, when you get enough people working with you, it really isn't. You know, what I ended up doing, I think, toward the end of 2013 was I met up with another couple guys that were doing a lot of wholesaling, doing a decent amount of wholesaling here in town. And we decided, you know, hey, let's two heads are better than one, or three heads are better than two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's form a partnership. Let's see what we can make happen here. And we ended up connecting with a lot of guys that were in, you know, trying to wholesale in the urban areas, guys that are from the urban areas, trying to, you know, go get cousin Willie's house and put it under contract and find somebody for it. Well, what those guys lacked was the ability to effectively communicate with the end buyer, right? And the end buyer being foreign investors and those sorts of things. So we were able to pair two things. We took a lot of the guys that were bringing property and didn't have anybody to sell them to, and then a lot of the guys that were trying to buy property and didn't have any property to buy in these areas, and we kind of put them together. So we kind of stuck ourselves in the middle and did a lot of wholesale deals in a lot of the urban areas for the guys that couldn't get them off their books.
That's great. You provide a one-stop shop and became the problem solver in the area.
Yeah.
What was, if you don't mind sharing, what was like your average transaction as far as selling the contracts?
Oh, man, it varied. You're talking like our profit margin or
right,
our assignment
right.
fees?
Yeah.
It varied. You know, there were deals where we, you know, either we realized that either we're not going to get this one off the books or we're just going to have to take, you know, $1,000 on it. And we did that every now and then. But, you know, we also had those deals where we'd make $20,000-$30,000 on one deal.
Wow.
So, you know, it varied. I'd say the average might maybe work out to be something like $8,000 a deal.
Oh, that's great. That's very impressive. Yeah. So after doing that many properties with your team there, what are some goals you have set for this year?
Sure. So, I guess taking a step back, I'm shifting entirely my mindset right now, and I'm doing a couple different new things that I wasn't doing last year. The partnership that I had set up, I have disbanded. I mean, I'm trying to work on becoming a more holistic investor. I don't want to be a wholesaler, because, you know, being just a strict wholesaler, I might as well be a realtor, right? I'm coordinating transactions all day long, and I don't want to do 300 transactions in a year. What I want to do is be able to have freedom in my life and let real estate investing be that vehicle. So I think the better way to approach this, at least for me, is to have a tool belt filled with a lot of different skill sets, wholesaling being one of them. And so I'm going to focus a lot more this year on doing a lot of not only wholesaling, but maybe some fix and flip, some wholetailing, where, you know, I don't necessarily fix the property up to top specifications and sell it for top dollar. But in turn, maybe I make it FHA ready. So take a property down, make it FHA ready, sell it, you know, still well below market value, but at a higher clip than I would if I was wholesaling it. And then, you know, another big goal for me this year is I want to focus on building my rental inventory back up.
Excellent. Now, you joined HomeVestors.
I did. That was so. I guess to make a long story even longer, when I decided that my partnership wasn't working, and it was kind of a mutual decision between the three of us that, you know, we weren't really liking how that was going. It was a lot of work, a lot of coordination of a lot of different people. We had staff, we had, you know, six or eight guys running around town trying to bring us deals, and we had to teach them how to do it right. And half of them probably couldn't even, you know, write a contract when they first met with us. So it made it tough, but we all decided that really wasn't what we wanted to do. And we broke that up in about September of 2014. And I decided, hey, you know what? I want to take this holistic approach, right? So I had been approached by another franchise owner here in Cleveland for Homevestors, and he kind of explained to me how it worked, and he'd actually brought us a couple deals through the summer of last year. So I looked into it a little bit deeper, and it just sounded like a good fit for me. You know, I talked to a couple different people within their corporation, got an idea of the cost to get in and what was provided for that. And it worked. And I've been doing that since October of 2014. So it's been going on my third month now, I guess. And it's going great. You know, I honestly could not be happier with the decision that I made. They provide me with everything that I was lacking in terms of structure and business sense. You know, again, my background was teaching, so I'm not a business guy, right? I'm flying by the seat of my pants half the time, and it ends up providing me with a lot of support that I didn't have, and I'm enjoying it. It's working well.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And they also provide you with funding, you were saying as well, right?
Yeah. You know, I don't think I should get into a lot of the details about it, but yeah, if you're a Homevestors franchise owner, they do have a bunch of different funding resources that, you know, I've found are actually cheaper than a lot of the private money guys around town here. But, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the system.
All right. Now, I've had countless people reaching out to me this year as things tend to slow down this time of year, December, late November, with marketing strategy. Can you share with us a couple of your top marketing strategies you use to bring in buyers?
Okay, sure. To bring in buyers, I'll tell you what. You know, going back to what I was saying that we did with our partnership last year and why we were able to slam out so many deals, we were bringing together buyers and wholesalers, right? Well, what I was able to do was get a lot of foreign buyers that were coming to town here. And we did that a few different ways, but one of the best ways that I was able to figure out was, you know, anybody listening is probably familiar with the like yellow letter campaigns to sellers, right? Where you say, hey, you know, my name's Brad, I want to buy your house. I thought, well, heck, if that works on sellers, it probably will work on buyers, right? So I ended up jumping into the tax records and finding which, you know, whether it was an LLC or an S corp or whatever, was buying these properties in you know, D plus to maybe B minus areas that were clearly buying them as rental property and buying more than one at any given time. And I would write them a letter. I'd say, dear, you know, managing partner of 123 LLC, my name's Brad Weber. And I'd say this literally, I'd write it on my yellow letters, same fashion as my seller yellow letters. My name's Brad Weber, and I desperately need to sell my rental property. If you're a serious investor, call this number right away. And honestly, man, we got a boatload of people calling us saying, hey, what do you got?
Yeah, and I'm glad you shared that, because that is an old strategy there and nobody does it.
Right, right. Well, so, and I'll tell you what, speaking of that too, man, you know, this is not a hard, it's not rocket science. You know what I mean? This is, you do the right things, you do them consistently, you do them day in and day out, and stuff's going to happen. There's no way around it. It's a numbers game. And so that's what we were, I mean, at the peak with my last partnership, we were sending probably 25 or 2,800 yellow letters to sellers every month. We actually had, we hired a stay-at-home mom, and she would just sit there and write yellow letters all day long for us. But I gave her the template, I gave her the list of addresses, she would just do it. And then, you know, at the same time, you know, when I needed more buyers, I had too many sellers, I'd have her write yellow letters to buyers. And you know, we were just able to kind of do both at the same time. It's like, you know, and everybody always asks me about that. What, you know, what's the best strategy? You know, what do you do when you have a house and no buyer? Or what do you do when you've got a buyer and no house? Well, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Just, it's not the chicken and the egg. It's not whichever one comes first. It's you're in the game now, whether you've got a buyer or a seller, figure it out. If you need a seller, go get one. You know, write letters to as many people as you possibly can in the demographic that you know you need to hit. And if you need a buyer, vice versa. So, I mean, that's the simplest strategy that I could share for free with anybody.
No, that's great. And I actually have a two-part follow-up to that then. Were you going old school on that and just going on the county auditor site and writing down each one manually, or were you buying these lists?
No. Well, you know what? I know there's a ton of good resources out there for people to buy lists. I had the advantage of, you know, already being licensed as an agent. I had access to the, you know, real estate agent tax whatever database. And I was able to pull the same information that you can get from these places where you pay for it from that database, just because I'm licensed. So for me, you know, it was a cost savings thing, but it's not all that expensive to just go out and buy the same list that I was getting for free. And that's it. I was pulling them from the tax data.
Okay. And then as far as finding your sellers, to mail the yellow letters. How were you generating those leads?
So that's where the fun part came in. I was able, you know, that's where you've got to be creative. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends across the country that, you know, I would brainstorm with. A lot of us started at the same time, which is really interesting, but we'd brainstorm ideas. And when you're talking about sellers, number one, you got to know what is being sold, right? You got to know what your buyers want. So, you know, I knew right off the rip from my first couple of deals, okay, there are people out there that want a high ROI, low cost to get in deal, right? So I knew I could go for that and get it sold to somebody, but sometimes I ran out of buyers. So not everybody's buying every month. So I would search for areas that I knew would be a high ROI, low cost purchase area, number one. But then, you know, the creativity comes into play when you've got to figure, how do you know if there's any meat on the bone, right? How do you know if there's any equity in the property that you're approaching? Because you don't want to spend time or pay somebody to spend time writing these letters and mailing these letters and, you know, paying for stamps and envelopes and paper and pens and all this stuff when you might be sending it to a dud house, right? So you've got to try and make sure that it's as accurate as you can possibly get it. So I would search for different demographics. I would search for people that, lived in a C-class area, single family house. Last mortgage they pulled on the property was maybe 2003. They purchased the house prior to 2000. So, you know, there's a little bit of meat on the bone. No more than two owners on record, stuff like that. So that, I can hope that there's some meat on the bone and I'm not just wasting a letter going out. So that's the idea there.
Now, for all the newbies out there that are soaking in all this great content you're delivering to us right now, where could you suggest they get started and they could take action on it right now?
You know what's funny, man, is I wouldn't say I'm like really into social networking or anything. Like, I'm not, but you know, I've got a boatload of connections on LinkedIn, and I do toss some deals up on Facebook every now and then and stuff. Well, you know, I'm LinkedIn always suggests to me who I should be, you know, looking at or, you know, friends with or whatever on mm-hmm. LinkedIn. And I actually just had some lady pop up a couple days ago who I said, okay, connect, you know, whatever. She says she's in real estate investing. She's in Northeast Ohio. Well, let's just see if there's any connections we can have. Right. She ends up calling me almost immediately after I sent her the request. And she said, oh my God, I just read your profile and you got to give me some direction. She's like, I've been doing this for a year. I haven't made one paycheck in a year. Quit my job. What do I do? You know? And so it's funny. The only reason I say it's funny is because you said, well, to a newbie, what advice would you give? And I gave mm-hmm. her, two pieces of advice. And this is the same advice I'd give anybody, is, you know, number one, get out of your own way. And I know that's kind of a cliche thing to say, but just get out of your own way. Just, you know, recognize that it's not very difficult to do this. It's a lot of hard work, but it's not hard to do this, if that makes any sense. So I said, number one, that's key. Number two, start writing yellow letters. And I gave her the same advice in terms of yellow letters that I just tossed out here. And then I did recommend to her bandit signs. Those did work really well for me when I first started, though I don't do them anymore as a Homevestors franchise owner. Those would be my two bits of advice. And I can tell you that, you know, having gotten up to a point where I was able to purchase a Homevestors franchise, all of that stuff's taken care of for me now. So the beauty of where I'm at right now is all of these things that I'm talking about you can do when you're a newbie, I don't even have to think about anymore. It's nice.
It's handled.
Yeah, handled.
Great. Well, you shared a wealth of knowledge with us today, and I appreciate that. Where can the listeners connect with you?
Sure. Well, like I said, LinkedIn. I've got, I think I'm under Brad Weber, Brad Weber on LinkedIn. My company is called Calm Brew Investing. That's investments. That's CalmBrew investments. And then, I think if you search Homevestors, you can find me on there too. And then I'm on Facebook, Brad Weber, I guess, is it okay for me to give my email out here? I don't mind. Anybody can email me anytime if you have questions. It's, you can email calmbrew@gmail.com. That's C-A-L-M as in Mary, B-R-E-W @gmail.com, calmbrew.
Excellent. Thanks so much for your time, Brad. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Got it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening in today. For more tips on real estate investing and creating streams of passive income, stop by michaelalder.com or connect with me on Twitter at michaelalder34, or you can find me on Facebook. All right, everybody, thanks, and let's take action today.